Our next case involves an arbitration agreement signed as part of the admissions papers of a patient to a nursing home. We've seen a number of similar cases. Based on my readings of the California reports, I'd have to say that nursing homes are notoriously bad at getting the right person to sign such agreements. This case is typical. The case is Rogers against Roseville SH. I'll call it the invalid arbitration agreement case. The facts are fairly straightforward. Claude, the patient, was in his early 80s. He suffered from some dementia, but he was not incompetent at all. He was admitted to Meadow Oaks of Roseville. Meadow Oaks is the name of the facility. It's a residential care facility for the elderly. While there, he suffered multiple falls because he didn't receive adequate supervision, which would have prevented the falls. The staff were also negligent in a number of other ways. For example, often when family members came to visit, they would find Claude outside in his wheelchair unattended. But Claude could not push himself in his wheelchair, and he could not open the facility door to enter or exit the facility by himself. Family members repeatedly instructed the staff not to leave Claude outside unattended. But on June 30, 2018, Claude was left outside for hours. It was a hot day. He suffered severe heat stroke and died on July 14th, just 2 weeks later. Plaintiffs, who are the surviving members of Claude's family, sued the defendants, the owner of the facility, for elder abuse and wrongful death. Defendant moved to compel arbitration, relying on an agreement signed by Claude's son, Richard. Richard was the one who also signed the admitting papers, promising that the bills would be paid, all of that sort of stuff. Why did Richard sign the papers? Because the manager of the facility asked him to. The manager asked Richard to come into the office to sign some papers. No one asked Claude to sign the papers. There was no evidence that Claude asked Richard to sign the papers for him. Richard signed the papers, indicating he was signing as a representative. He did wonder at the time why they asked him to sign the papers, because he lived some distance away and would not have been around. But he did sign them, and he also signed the appendix that contained the arbitration agreement. But there's no indication that Richard had any legal authority to act on Claude's behalf. As a result, the trial court denied the motion to compel, finding that there was no valid agency agreement between Claude and Richard, and therefore no valid arbitration agreement. It should have been signed by Claude. Richard simply did not have the authority to sign the agreement on Claude's behalf. Defendant appealed to the Third District, and the Third District affirmed. Not surprising. A couple of interesting points to note in the decision, however. First of all, the defendant repeatedly referred to facts in the case with no reference to the record. The court announced that with no reference to the record, such assertions of fact were totally forfeited. So, nursing homes are not only bad at overseeing the signing of agreements, but they also seem to be bad at proving them in court. The court also made it clear that the burden of proving a valid agency agreement lies with the person who is dealing with the purported agent, here the defendant home. There was no evidence that Claude was incompetent, and there was no evidence that Claude asked Richard to sign anything. In fact, there was no evidence that Claude even knew that Richard had signed something. There was not any evidence that Richard might have held a durable power of attorney that in the right circumstance might have been used to act on behalf of Claude. Defendant argued that since Claude had the right to rescind the arbitration agreement within 30 days, his failure to do so should be viewed as a ratification of the agreement. But how could Claude ratify something that he knew nothing about? The court thought no. Defendant also argued that since Richard signed the papers as though he had the authority to do so, the court should at least find an ostensible agency. But, said the court, an ostensible agency arises when the principal's conduct causes the third party to reasonably believe that the agent has the authority to act on the principal's behalf. An agency, whether it's actual or ostensible, cannot be created by the conduct of the agent alone. Rather, conduct by the principal is essential to create the agency. Here, there was no evidence of any conduct by the principal, Claude. Finally, defendant argued that the trial court's ruling that Richard did not have the authority to sign the arbitration agreement but had the authority to sign the other admissions documents singled out the arbitration agreement for special treatment, and we know that would violate the Federal Arbitration Act. But the only issue before the trial court on defendant's petition to compel arbitration was whether or not a valid agreement to arbitrate existed. The trial court was not asked to and did not decide whether the other admissions documents Richard signed were valid or enforceable. The trial court applied general principles of contract and agency law to determine whether or not Richard had the authority to sign the arbitration agreement. The arbitration agreement was not singled out. It was the only agreement under consideration by the court. And so, in the invalid arbitration agreement case, the Court of Appeal affirmed the decision below.